Monitor brings you Meet the Press. And as we said before, we have checked our notes and we find that, yes, it is John McCone, the chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission, who will be the panelist, or rather the subject of the interview on Meet the Press, facing a panel consisting of Arthur Kroc of the New York Times, Peter Hackus of NBC News, Marquis Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and the founder of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks. This program, which has been presented for some 15 years to an ever-increasing audience, brings before the panel leaders in national and international affairs. Here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
One of the most important decisions to be made by the new administration is whether to resume the testing of atomic weapons. More than 2 years ago, the United States discontinued nuclear testing, hoping to persuade the Soviet Union to enter into an agreement for a permanent system of controls. No agreement is now in sight, and the Geneva Conference 2 weeks ago decided to recess until February 7th. President-elect Kennedy has said that he will make one last effort to negotiate. The man who has been closest to these deliberations is Chairman John McCone of the Atomic Energy Commission, who is our guest today. He recently returned from an inspection tour of atomic bases overseas. Mr. McCone is an engineer and businessman. He became chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission in July of 1958. We'll start the questions today with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. McCone, on October 31st of 1958, we stopped all nuclear testing. What would you say we've accomplished by halting our tests?
Well, we have engaged in a very intense negotiation with the Soviets and the British in an endeavor to reach an agreement on the suspension of tests with proper controls. The results of that effort have been disappointing to date.
Well, I mean, when I say accomplished, have we eased world tension? Have we added to the security of the free world, or have we added to our own security?
I do not think
have we lessened the chances of war?
I do not think that we have done any of those things, Mr. Spivak. I think had we been successful, we would have started on a road of better understanding that might have lessened the chances of war. But being unsuccessful, I do not think we have accomplished any of those objectives.
There's been no gain, then, in your judgment, for either the United States or the free world.
No, quite to the contrary, I think there might have been harm.
Well, now, when you were on this program about a year ago, I think it was on November 22nd of 1959, you said that we ought to start testing shortly after December 31st of 59 if we didn't come to some agreement with the Soviet that we could accept.
That's correct. My words, as I recall them, were that I would extend it only for a week, on a week-by-week basis.
Well, now we have extended it again for over a year. Why? Who is responsible for that?
Well, this has been a decision of the administration, and it is understandable in the light of events as they evolved throughout the year.
Why has the president done that in the face of the advice from people like you and from some of his military advisors?
Well, he had to balance advice from me and from the military advisors with advice he received from others and make a determination as to what he felt was in the best interest of the country with all risks involved. You remember that through the year there was the summit conference, there were a number of technical conferences, there were various events took place, each of which gave some thread of hope that a successful negotiation might be accomplished.
Would you say that during those 2 years our security has been damaged in any way?
I think so. For the reason that we have no knowledge of what the Soviets have been doing. And without knowledge, they may have been testing. We do not know. We have no means of determining whether they have been testing or not. And if they have been testing, and I feel that it's very possible that they have been, then they have made advances that we have not made.
Mr. Kroc.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to be fairly established now that the Israel government has built or is building a reactor. I'm not familiar with the technical terms, But as I understand it, this is an installation that has weapons capability. Is that correct? And is the statement correct in the first place that Israel has built such a...
We have only informal and unofficial information on a program of the Israeli government to build a nuclear reactor. Nuclear reactor itself does not create a weapon capability. However, all nuclear reactors do breed plutonium, and plutonium is a weapon material.
Well,
our information is unofficial and informal, and we have asked for further information from the Israeli government.
Well, then, you say that the weapons capability is, of course, there, it becomes a question of intent. The Israel government, as I understand it, says they have no thought of producing weapons through this medium or any use of plutonium for that purpose. Would it not be a very perfect opportunity for the government of Israel, considering that it has been the beneficiary of great help from the United States government and that their contributions to the state have been made tax deductible by Americans, would it not be a remarkably fine opportunity for them to agree to be the model for an inspection system whereby the benevolence of this intent could be proved not only to us but to the world?
Yes, that's entirely possible, Mr. Kroc. A system of safeguards has been developed by the International Atomic Energy Agency. Each one of our bilaterals with countries, including our research bilateral with Israel, provides for safeguards, which is a means of verification that the materials produced in the reactor will be used for civil rather than military purposes. And this all could be installed, and this would allay fear in the minds of the people throughout the world that a country was building a reactor for the purpose of developing a weapon capability.
There's one more thing that, obviously, if we have made informal inquiries, this is a surprise to us.
Yes, it is.
So it was done in secret. And I don't know anything about the subject, but how could the government of Israel perfect this installation without the aid of some other nuclear power? So isn't the element of secrecy a rather astonishing thing in the circumstances? And what could that power be that rendered the assistance that seems to me was required?
Well, there are a number of countries that might have rendered assistance, if a country indeed did render assistance. And we really do not know enough about it to say what assistance, if any, was rendered.
So it was done secretly?
The development was not revealed to us. We did not know about it until we learned about it informally and unofficially very recently.
Thank you.
Mr. Childs.
Mr. McCone, you've made your views very clear again and again that you think that this moratorium on testing is very dangerous, and your belief that the Russians are secretly testing. Now, a distinguished scientist, Dr. Hans Bethe, who is a member of President Eisenhower's Scientific Advisory Board and a pioneer in the atomic bomb, takes the opposite view, and I'd like to read you a quotation from a recent article of his. Having participated in the negotiations with the Russian scientists at Geneva on three occasions, I believe that they are sincere in wanting the test cessation agreement and do not intend to cheat on it. Now, that view is so much the opposite of yours. Do you think that he was taken in by the Russians, or how did he arrive at that?
Well, I don't know how he arrived at it. There are a great many people that have his view and have so expressed it. Scientists and also others. I happen to believe that I've studied their weapon development. I can see what improvements they can make by testing. I know that underground testing is very cheap and can be done in a clandestine manner. I know that there is no possibility of detecting because we have no instruments that can detect and identify underground explosions that are carried out in the Siberian heartland of Russia, and therefore I assume that they are taking advantage of the situation that they have in hand and are proceeding with their weapon developments.
You think they are doing this now, Mr. McCall?
I think so. That's my opinion.
But is there any proof for that at all?
No, there is no proof for that.
That's a
but there can be no proof because there is no way of proving it.
Yes. And in the same article, Dr. Bader says that we today, the United States, are very far ahead of the Russians in the development of small atomic weapons. Is that correct in your opinion?
Well, I have no way of knowing, nor do I know how he knows. I know we have made advances. We have developed small atomic weapons. That is well known, and therefore tactical uses and for air defense and for other uses. We know nothing of their developments whatsoever.
We don't have any intelligence on that at all.
No, we have no information.
The point
on that.
He makes from this supposition, if it is that apparently, is that to resume testing would enable them to catch up in the small weapons field. You wouldn't agree with that.
No, I wouldn't agree with that. Of course, they would make developments just as we would make developments. However, the developments that we can make, if we would resume testing and underground testing, and I want to emphasize that this I am speaking of because of the fallout problem of atmospheric testing, the advances that we make, in my opinion, would be very significant. And we should not forego this opportunity unless we are absolutely sure that the Soviets have stopped also, and we are not sure of that now, sir.
Mr. Hackus.
Mr. McCone, you've just returned from a trip to Europe, including a visit to General Norstad, who's the NATO military chief. In your opinion, should, as there's great pressure apparently now, should the United States be called on to set up NATO as a nuclear power? And if so, under what provisos or restrictions, if any?
Well, there are restrictions under the law provide that nuclear weapons supplied by us must be under our custody and control. Actually, the situation is that we are dependent upon the forces of the NATO alliance to defend the free world. And they are going to do that with both nuclear and conventional weapons. And some means must be developed so that those forces, the nuclear forces, can respond, if called upon, to respond against a monolithic enemy that can strike almost instantly.
Well, couldn't we do this?
This is General Norstad's problem.
Couldn't we accomplish the same thing by maintaining the setup as it now stands, with Britain and the United States in control of whatever nuclear weapons are needed by NATO? Why does NATO have to have its own strike force? That's right.
Well, NATO is an assembly of 15 independent countries, each of which face the Soviet threat, and therefore each must have a voice in its own defense.
Won't this plan strike a rather sensitive nerve in Congress when the session begins in January?
Well, I can't forecast the attitude of Congress. I think Congress, when they realize a problem, will take such steps as are necessary to ensure the proper defense of the free world.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Chairman, we've insisted from the beginning that we would not sign an agreement with the Russians that couldn't give us proper inspection and control. Isn't that so?
That's correct.
Well, now, the agreement that we're prepared now to sign, will that give us the protection we want? Will that give us the inspection and the control that we think necessary for proper policing?
Well, if we can reach agreement with the Soviets on the control system that we want and we have proposed, then, and if we proceed as we have proposed with the improvement of seismic technology, then I think we will accomplish that objective, yes.
Well, now I'm talking now specifically about we want, I believe, 21 inspection posts, and the Soviets have offered us 15. Is that correct?
That's right.
And we've asked for, the West says we need 20 on-site inspections, and the Soviet wants 3. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, now, will the 20 on-site inspections that we want and the 21 inspection posts be sufficient to protect us against cheating?
The 21 inspection posts and the 20 on-site inspections would protect us against cheating in larger size underground explosions. Those are above a seismic signal of 4.75, or the equivalent of about a 20 kiloton explosion. Now, the proposal goes one step further, Mr. Spivak. It proposes a coordinated research program to improve seismology, to improve the instrumentation in these stations, so that the threshold of their capability can be lowered.
But that number would not give us the protection we now seek.
The number of 21?
The number of 20 and 21. That is, the number of on-site inspections and the number of inspection posts would not give us.
No, it would not. The protection we seek would evolve through the research, the seismic research, which we have proposed as part of this very proposal which you speak of.
And this would take some time.
It would take 2 years or 2.5 years, in our opinion.
Well, can we afford to go on not testing during that period of time while that is being developed?
Well, we propose that if agreement is reached, that these stations be installed, and as they are installed, they be put in operation, and the systems start to work. And I think that this is a workable plan, yes. Now, the Soviets have countered by proposing that if they do agree on the system, that the whole system be installed, and that nothing be done in the way of operating it until it is completed, and that's 4 years from now. And hence, they would enjoy a 4-year unpoliced moratorium, and that would be unacceptable to us.
What do you personally think will contribute more to the security of the United States and the free world, a nuclear test ban which we seem ready to sign, or a resumption of underground testing and testing in outer space on our part?
Well, that's a difficult question, Mr. Spivak. I think that the resumption of underground testing and outer space testing would probably contribute more to the security of the free world because it would advance this technology. On the other hand, an agreement might contribute greatly to relieving tension, and it might pave the way to other to agreements in more important areas of disarmament. And that is the hope that lies behind this undertaking.
Mr. Kroc.
On the point of the time of the moratorium, Mr. Chairman, it's gone on now for almost 2 years, isn't it? Or perhaps a little bit more than 2 years.
A little more than that, sir.
And I suppose you can assume that if the administration did not end the moratorium by this time, that it could naturally not take a step of that magnitude affecting, as it would, every policy of the next administration, that we must assume that nothing from here until Mr. Kennedy becomes president will be done in this field. That, as I understood his plan, it would involve, perhaps, he'd make one more try, he said. That would involve a few more weeks or perhaps months. Does that make any difference anymore? If the Russians have been cheating, haven't they had enough time now to perfect something that would give them a great advantage already?
They would have time. And, of course, weeks are important, in my opinion. However, as you say, this is an extremely important policy matter for Mr. Kennedy's administration. And he said he was going to make a good hard try to reach an agreement, and I think he should be given that opportunity. I do not think it should take him long to determine the true intentions of the Soviets, because he has close to him such men as Senator Anderson and Mr. Hollifield, the new chairman of the Joint Committee, Senator Gore and Senator Jackson, all who have been following this matter very closely.
Now, let's assume that the Russians have, that the horse hasn't gotten out of the stable yet, and that before we finish the negotiations that we can get a treaty. I have a very wild assumption from my standpoint, because I don't think the Russians want one, and it seems to me that if I were in their position, I would rather negotiate than act. Negotiation, in this case, being the very enemy of action. Suppose we get a treaty, however, and it has all these various inspection arrangements, and of course we never would have a treaty unless they felt it was to their advantage to have this treaty. Otherwise, how could we have one? All right, we have one that they find to their advantage, and we all sign up. And then the Russians decide it's to their advantage to violate this treaty. And that if they're caught, that the consequences would be far less important to them than the advantage they gained by the cheating. What sanctions possible could they fear, or could the free world apply, or the rest of the signatories apply, if that was their procedure?
Well, I would think that the only sanctions that could be applied would be and it would mean the end of the treaty, and there would be, the parties to the treaty would be free to proceed on their own. I don't see how there could be any other sanction.
Mr. Childs.
You've indicated, Mr. McComb, that you're going to stay on the commission after January 20, although you will not be chairman, because that falls within the purview of the new president to name a chairman. Now, I'd like to...
I have not indicated that.
Well, I thought in your last interview in the U.S. News and World Report, you said...
I don't think that question was asked.
Well, I thought you indicated you would. Well, are you going to stay on?
No, I do not intend to stay on the commission.
You are not going to
after
stay.
January the 20th. I think that President-elect Kennedy should appoint his new chairman, and I think that at that time I intend to return to private life.
Oh, I see. You could stay on, however, as a member of the commission, could you not, Mr. McComb?
Well, this seems to be practice that you're appointed for a term of years, and I presume I could stay on as a member of the commission, yes.
And yours runs till 1963?
I think so, yes.
But don't you feel that with your knowledge and background and experience that perhaps you have a public duty to stay on as a commission member, if not as chairman?
No, I came at President Eisenhower's request with the understanding that if my services were satisfactory, I would stay for the balance of his term. And then I told him at that time that at that time I would have to return to private life, and that's what I intended.
But you would not think that that condition would apply to the other commission members, only to the chairman?
Well, yes, I would think that it would apply more to the chairman than to the commission members.
Mr. Hackett.
Mr. McCone, have you been asked to confer with anyone in the incoming Kennedy administration?
No, not at all.
Have you yourself made any overtures to discuss anything with an eye toward carrying on this transition?
No. I pointed out to Mr. Clark Clifford shortly after the election that there was a vacancy on the commission, and that if Senator Kennedy would designate the man he wished to be chairman, there was a possibility that that man might receive an interim appointment for the intervening months, and in this way the transition could be accomplished in an orderly way. However, I think that Mr. Kennedy has been extremely busy with his cabinet, and no suggestions have been made.
Well, one of the gentlemen who's been mentioned as a possible successor in your post, Mr. Robert McKinney, has recently made a number of charges against the AEC. The main charge is that there's been some foot dragging, particularly in the Atoms for Peace program, and I think he's referring mainly to the power reactor program. How do you answer these criticisms? And they were very strong in the Joint Committee report.
Well, I think that the Atoms for Peace program has been going along very well indeed. And I think the fact that several power companies are now in active negotiation for building large plants
Well, he makes the point that it's nuclear, not competitive
nuclear
as yet.
Plants on a competitive basis indicate that Mr. McKinney's statement is not quite right. I have on my desk right now a proposal from one company and expect another one from a second company to build very large plants on a purely competitive basis. And I think that verifies that progress has been made.
Gentlemen, we have about 2 minutes remaining. Mr. Spivak.
Mr. McCone, Senator Humphrey suggested the other day that if we don't get an agreement at Geneva by June of 1961, we ought to resume testing. Would you want to wait that long?
Well, I don't think it's within my province to set any date for the new administration. However, I don't think it's necessary to wait that long.
Well, do you think it would be wise to wait that
long? No, I don't think it'd be wise to wait that long.
Mr. Childs.
Khrushchev has said several times something about an amazing new weapon. Do you have any reason to believe that they've got some revolutionary new advance, Mr. Chairman?
No, I have no way to know what he was referring to. I do know that his laboratories are working energetically in a great many fields because I visited them.
Mr. Kroc.
What other steps have you taken to make sure that you get out of here on the 20th of January, so unlike other Republicans who seem unable to part?
Well, my wife is in Los Angeles opening my Pasadena home, and some of my staff are out there, and an automobile has been sent west, so a few steps have been taken, Mr. Kroc.
Mr. Hackett.
Mr. McCone, could this super weapon that Khrushchev has talked about be this business of carrying a bomb in a satellite, which could be touched off at the push of a button? Have we any indication that that's what it is?
That in itself is not a weapon.
That
would
be
a weapon system.
A hydrogen bomb is what I'm talking about.
That would be a weapon system. He might be referring to something such as that. He might be referring to a biological weapon or something that's non-nucleonic. I do not know.
Could it be the neutron bomb, the death ray bomb that they've talked a great deal about?
It might be, although I do not think that he would refer to that in such a dramatic manner, although that would be an exceedingly important development, particularly for the tactical ground forces.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry to have to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
Monitor's thanks to Mr. John A. McCone, Chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission and the Meet the Press panel, Arthur Kroc of the New York Times, Peter Hackus, NBC News, Marquis Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and Lawrence Spivak. Next week's guest on Meet the Press will be Dr. Henry Heald, president of the Ford Foundation. Meet the Press, celebrating its 16th anniversary on the air, is produced by Lawrence Spivak. Now an important warning from the National Safety Council, which points out that the two worst troublemakers for the winter driver are slippery surfaces and poor visibility.